I'm going to hand over to, I think how I'd like to do it is to start with NRF and then go to NACI and then go to DSI. Then Mr. Mosa, if there are any issues that you want to cover that from NACI and the NRF, you'll cover them. So yeah, those are the questions, comments and recommendations. How I'd like to suggest, Chair, matters that need elaboration, let's put them in writing. Matters that we can just be short and succinct on, let's address them now.
Okay.
So time allocation, if we can by 3 o'clock be handing over to the part 2, which is HSRC and the CSIR, I'd really appreciate that.
Thank you, Chair. We have already allocated some of the questions that need clarification to members that are present here. And I can just be brief and start by welcoming all the comments that we've received from honorable members. And also, I think really a theme, Chair, that is emerging of being solution-oriented, which we really appreciate. Some of the board members were even saying that, you know, some of the honorable members should have been on the board to help with thinking around solutions. Chair, from our end, I just want to request that this issue of the budget coordination be elevated. We recognize very much as the NRF that it is beyond our power and influence to drive it. But when it was presented to us by the DG of DSI, we were very excited about it because, as we have been saying, that the issue of funding can in some part be solved by through budget coordination, and you have also highlighted that point. And if this PPC can really assist in making that issue a priority, we would really appreciate it. I also just want to say that we acknowledge the recognition that some of the work we do in some ways may not be accessible to communities. And I think we will do what we can through our science engagement program to make sure that this issue is addressed. There have been some suggestions that we have noted in order to improve participation. And also the issue of local government, we have noted bringing innovation much closer to the ground and to the grassroots. And I think the head of the delegation had already indicated that we are thinking around grassroots innovation and how to support it, and especially linking to industry, local industry as well. Finally, from my end, Chair, I just want to also elevate the issue of developing people from early childhood development. I think that the point about linking what we do as NRF at postgraduate level with basic education is really important, especially around the areas of science, math, engineering. It's really important. And also we are thinking about how to add the issue of humanities and the arts to the STEM thinking, to turn it into STEAM, which is a national move. And that STEAM approach is going to be important in dealing with some of the concerns that are being raised, for example, on how when you sharpen minds, you can also create more problems for society if people are not given social values that will help them to be positive members of society. So, Chair, we've noted these issues, and I just want to hand over to the CEO and the executive to address some of the points of clarity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe let me just make a few remarks. I'll ask my executive team to respond to pointed questions. And if there's anything that will stay unanswered, I'll then respond to at the end. Just to start, let me echo the sentiments that the chair of the NRF body just mentioned now. And just assessing from the questions that came from the honorable members, it's very clear in all our minds that we're all driven by a common interest, which is the interest of making South Africa better, of improving the quality of life for South Africans, and taking science as a common good from which we should derive solutions to our common challenges. There's a lot of context that might be required in some of the areas, but I won't have the time to go through all of that. But maybe there are a few questions that I might just have to reflect on, some of which were directed to the DSI, and maybe the DSI can talk to in slightly more detail, but I'll just give some hints before I ask my colleagues to respond to some of it. So the first one that is very critical is our role in supporting the HDIs. And I will use realistic examples here. Not so long ago, I did my institutional business. And if I were to draw a parallel between two universities, the University of Pretoria and the University, Waterloo University, for example, the number of staff at WSU that have PhDs, staff members with PhD, is less than 17%, 1/7. The number of staff with PhDs at UP is over 75%. That should give you a context of the challenges or the contrast between the two universities. That should tell you something about the quality of research that can be done in those universities. It can tell you much about the quality of teaching and learning that can happen in those universities. You have to factor the fact that without a PhD, you cannot supervise a PhD, which therefore means if you go to WSU, and if anything argument you try to UniVen in other universities, you will then realize that it means they can actually have smaller supervisory capacity, and once they have such a smaller supervisory capacity, it means even the grants that they can apply for, that they can qualify from the NRF, will be smaller. That's what sort of happens in the context. That's something that I think one has to reflect on very carefully. There was a question that related to the Africa Fund, and I just want to touch briefly on this. We know our continent very well. Africa as a continent accounts for 2% of the world research output. Only 2%. That's Africa as a whole. We spend only 1.3% of the world research spending as a continent. And the question that we ask around the patents, we only produce about 0.2% of the world patents that are produced in the world. And the list can go on and on of things that are not well placed within the continent. It is in this context that as the NRF, we support the idea of the development of the Africa Research Fund. But in addition, there's some work that's already taking place in that context. For example, we award 10 ORTAM research chairs that are based in 9 countries within the sub-Saharan Africa. And the whole idea again is linked to the very same point that we are not safe until everyone in Africa is safe. So we have to sort of take the continent along with. So there's a lot of context that I think is required for one to then answer some of these questions. But I'm not going to get into the details now. I'm going to hand over and direct some of these questions to my executive team. From Honorable Koshoff, there was a question around the turnover of staff. I will ask the group executive responsible for corporate services, Mr. Wakile, to respond to that. And I will also ask the DCO, Dr. Lottering, to respond to the question around the lack of capacity, it not being a lack of capacity, but being a lack of priorities, and linking that to the HDI and how to make them better rated institutions. From Honorable Sibiya, there was a question about the Putisa program. I'll ask Deputy CEO, Dr. Clifford Momani, to just provide more information on how this program works. Honorable King, your comments were all factored. I think there were comments. I won't respond to those. I think that's well, you're all taken. I won't add on what you said. Honorable McKenzie, the question that you asked, perhaps the Univen one, is also linked to what I raised about the fundability of researchers in a particular area. And of course, we need to actually improve that, but when Dr. Lottering responds to this question on HDR, you will also touch on this component. There was a question or questions that were directed to DSI that we might want to reflect on. One, or a few of which are around how much work has resulted in IP that has been commercialized, and how much has benefited South Africa, which IP has been sold to international entities, how many spin off companies and so forth. I will ask the two DCOs to just touch on that, Dr. Lessing and Dr. Nguman, just to talk about IP that comes from the research that's conducted within the NRF national facilities. Honorable Kagao, you have asked a number of questions. One, the funding gap, DCO, Dr. Lutheran will respond to that. We did a proper calculation of how much money is required to fund the gap of students that meet all the requirements that are not funded. So he will give a breakdown of that. There's a question about culture. And as you all know, culture is strategy for breakfast. So if you don't really have the right culture within any entity, whatever you put as your strategy, you might as well just forget about it. We will respond through the group executive of corporate services on what we mean by the culture improvement and talk about culture in the context of transformation of the system and transformation within the organization. There's a question around the programs that are being implemented, and what the review of the programs I mean. But maybe let me just give a little bit of context here before I ask this question. So a number of instruments that NRF has will not change on a year to year. So if I use an example, so when we make a commitment to an instrument, let's say it's like a check, which is one check, an instrument. If I award a check today, I'm basically making a 15-year commitment during that period, because it can be it's a renewable up to 3 times in cycles of 5 years. So they're not going to change quickly, but their programs are sort of a long-term programs. You can think of it in the same form as for centers of excellence. You can think of the same way that you award a bursary to PhD students. You award them this year, but you're saying for the next 3 years I've committed to funding. It's not going to be a new instrument going forward. But I will ask the CEO, Dr. Lottering, to touch on the programs and the reviews. The question that's very critical, and I'm going to put one of the board members on the spot here in a moment, but it's a question that relates to Itemba Labs and the aspect of cancer treatments from Honorable Kakao and Dr. Mwamani will respond to this component in terms of what it means. And in the same form, it will also respond to the question around the foreign income, which increases from 162 million rands to 134 million rands in this year, largely coming from the sales of radioisotopes, which came from Honorable Maniso, but I will respond to that. The part that I want to put a board member on the spot, and I might be fired here, so you know if I'm fired, what it means. Honorable Yabo, you touched on the PBMRs. And the last CEO of the PBMR is on the board of the NRF, so I'd like him to respond to that component. Dr. Alex, like, I would like you to sort of just give a gift. Oh, and Funeka is there as well, on the left side, so yeah. And I think from Honorable Yabo, there are a lot of issues that you've raised. I think I fully agree with you that the funding of postgraduates, the mechanism of taking the return on investment on the money spent, it can't just be the issue of quantity counting. It has to look deeper into that. I think I'll take that as a comment. And of course, we have started developing some of these tools of monitoring what happens to people that were funded, what happens down the line. And that's why there are a lot of programs that they start looking into that we align to, which is that saying, for example, the future professor program, how do we align to that? How do we ensure that capacity in a young cohort is well developed and we can see a full path of them generating research outputs in the future? And I think I agree with the aspect of the knowledge acquisition being mismatched in some areas. And this is the reason why within the NRF we are pushing the aspect of innovation, where we are saying it can't just be someone graduating and waiting for the system to absorb them. How do we then drive innovation to the point that somebody can, in a space where there's no employment, you can generate IP that you can find ways, mechanisms of generating commercial value from that IP. And once that is done, let's see how we can link with other entities to ensure that that is well supported. So I think from the question point of view, those are the questions that I will ask my group executives to respond to. CFO, you may want to touch slightly on the funding part as well in relation to the for income that Clifford will have responded to. There's also the question that was asked, Chair, Honorable Chair, by you around the 65 million rand fence. DCO, Mumani, will touch on that as well, on the fence and why this fence is a necessity. And as I've mentioned, Dr. Lutaling will respond to how much money do we really need to close the gap. I think those are the questions that I have, and I will hand over to my executives, maybe in that order. Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I think there's a broad acknowledgement within all of us in this room that the work that is being done is being done well, as shown the funds that we receive are properly spent, as shown by a clean audit statement. I have to emphasize that it's really an issue of getting more in order to do more with resources. In terms of the student funds, the shortage is 1.3 billion, and Chairperson, you asked for a detailed account. We've got a document that can give all the details that are required in this regard. It's currently 1.3 billion. Based upon what we have received in terms of application of students that qualify for funding. However, if we look at other policy documents that we have to respond to, for example, the NDP, and the requirement that we should have 5,000 PhDs by 2030, it means at this point we should be receiving at least 2 billion in funding. Hence, we've indicated earlier that the shortfall is about 2 billion currently going forward. Funding for students goes hand in hand with the capability of being able to train those students. Therefore, if we increase the budget for funding students, we also have to increase the budget for researchers in order to train those students. That in addition is a billion shortfall currently. So the current shortfall is about 2.3 billion and that money increases as we go forward. And again, if you look at it from the NDP perspective, it's an even higher amount. Now, how do you grow the pipeline of postgraduate students which ultimately lead to the academics, which ultimately lead into the economic sector? It means from a national perspective, we have to increase the capability and capacity at all universities. Therefore, we've got to look at the smaller institutions that we have and try and increase the capacity. As was pointed out, you can't train students without doctorates at university. So the first target and priority target is to increase the number of PhDs. You can't increase the number of PhDs if you don't have funding to increase the number of postgraduate students. You can't increase the number of postgraduate students if you don't have researchers to train those postgraduate students. So if we're going to realize our objectives, we've got to start with a 2.5 billion pump in of money for 2023 onwards. Otherwise, we don't realize our plans. We have started the NRF with a university development program whereby we're going to look specifically at each institution, prioritizing the historically disadvantaged institutions with a strategic plan of how they see their development going forward. We're looking at these plans in an integrated way, trying to exploit the fact that higher education and science sit in the one ministry. So we try and bring all the tools that sit within this ministry to bear on developing an institution according to a strategic plan that's developed with each of those institutions. This is something we're going to start looking at from this year forward and hopefully be implemented by 2024 onwards. But again, to make that realize that plan, we need funds. The cable plan was approved towards the end of last year, so we've only started looking now at the NRF of reprioritizing our programs in order to be aligned with the Decadal plan. So these plans should be completed this year, coming into our next performance plan and start being implemented from 2024 onwards. On the IP side, the Innovation Fund used to be at the National Research Foundation. And around 2008, I think, the Department then of Science and Technology created the Technology Innovation Agency. And the Innovation Fund was one of the instruments that went into the Technology Innovation Agency. So currently, at the NRF, the majority of research that is funded is basic fundamental research, type of research. There's probably less than 10% that lends itself to intellectual property. But the proper analysis will be done now that we've introduced a business unit for innovation under RESA that's going to look at this in greater detail.
Thank you, honorable members and chairperson. The question on the turnover rate indeed is influenced partly by the greener pastures, but there are other factors as well, particularly in the skills cohort that are very mobile, like your software development areas that also contribute to the turning over. And if I may tie this to the question that was asked around the target of 3% vis-a-vis high performance, before I talk to the culture, so the turnover determines and based on the existing contract, the fixed structure, there's only so much you can do in terms of accelerating change. And as you would see, as of the year 2020-2021, the target that was achieved was 8%. It is a factor of opportunities created and opportunities available to achieve the target, but they do tend to saturate especially in the outer years, because that 8% was as a consequence of a deliberate action. We reviewed the employment equity plan, there were good opportunities then, and that's what we were able to achieve. So the planning was deliberate, and it was understood that we can't have frivolous targets that we wouldn't meet. So I needed to explain in that way. Just in terms of the culture improvement project, it started about 2.5 years ago, and its aim is simply really to reflect to the organization, the manifest culture in the organization. Culture being about how things are done around an organization. You can't hope to change the organization if the culture is static or preventative of change. So basically it is to reflect the deeper levels of culture, because sometimes you can descend culture on the basis of what you see, but there's also the fundamental deeper element that prevents the organization from changing and optimizing. And so the aim is to really surface that deeper level part of the culture, know what it is, but basically then also the plan to look at what it is then that will be elements of excellence that you can infuse into the culture in terms of how we do things around in the organization. And what it is that needs to be debunked totally that sort of inhibits the organization progress. That's the ultimate aim, and we are able to reduce that to some manageable details. And in this respect, we've already conducted a survey which had a very good response rate of 42% of the total staff. There has been about 35% reach in respect of just culture conversations around the organization before that survey was done. And I imagine that that's why the response rate was good. It usually hovers around 10% if you are lucky. And this feedback in terms of the manifest culture has been shared with the employees. And we are now, the development is a process of co-creating a desirable culture that obviously the board leads what needs to prevail, the executive leads, but also you need to take it from the bottom to be able to work with the entire organization to bring about this culture that will realize high performance. That's in a nutshell how I would like to. Chair, I don't know, with your permission, CEO, there was a question around the vacancy rate as well. Our vacancy rate is 7%. Which simply translates into 98 unfilled positions. And there's a background behind that. During the COVID we took a deliberate decision to hold back on to filling vacancies because it was the responsible thing to do, otherwise it could lead to a review of headcounts. We didn't know how long the cuts would last. And as soon as the new budget came through, we were able to then begin to fill vacancies. But again, we are at another bout of, but this time around, selected a moratorium on some of the vacancies because the organization is busy currently changing. And so as soon as the change is finalized, then there should be a pickup in terms of the vacancies. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and committee members, and to the CEO for directing the difficult questions to me. There are a number of questions that were asked that I will try and answer as briefly as possible. Perhaps starting with the easiest one, the matter of the fencing of the Meerkat National Park. The money has been allocated by the department to Sarawak, which is our radio astronomy observatory that are the host to the square kilometer array, and that is to address a variety of issues that one, the national park should face in terms of the requirements, but also to address the issue of problem animals so that they do not impact the farmers who are still undertaking their activities in that space. So the money is has been allocated, not yet in the bank yet. The issue of the Pushesa program, A research program was started which looked at the ecology and the ecosystem set up of what of a fish known as old four legs and silicates, which is a fish that was known as a thought to have been extinct a long time ago but was rediscovered. So a specific ecosystem program was started to undertake the biology, ecology, and other environmental context for that. But it was soon, and so funded by the DSI, but it was soon established that there were very few takers of people from the designated communities, both at a researcher level, in terms of applying and being successful to apply for access to the research infrastructure and other related activities. That there were very few takers from designated groups, both students and researchers. Just as an example, a study that we did to look at who were the contributing researchers in the area of marine science between 2010 and 2014. And it indicated that there were only 11 black researchers to 195 white researchers. So the ACEP Professor Program was started in order to address that issue, in order to increase and grow the number of marine scientists that come from the historically disadvantaged communities. With the support of the DSI, that program grew by 2012 there were only 12 honor students, but by 2021 you had a much larger number of 13 honor students, 51 master's students, and 6 PhD students, all being black students from historically disadvantaged universities. And the program specifically is driving transformation in the marine sciences by only being focusing on 4 historically disadvantaged institutions, University of the Western Cape, Forte, Zululand, and Waterloo University. And through the partnership between our national facilities, the South African Institute for Aquatic Biodiversity, and other partner institutions, this provides access to research infrastructure, particularly marine science research infrastructure, as well as co-teaching by our facility researchers and researchers from other universities, or specifically the students that come from the historical universities. That program now is extended, with the support again of DSI, to now take the infrastructure closer to the universities that we're partnering with, beyond just SIAP, through the establishment of what are called joint marine laboratories. And these are specialized laboratories that tackle issues in the marine science context. So UWC has one that's being established around microplastics, and we know what that problem is. University of Forte has one on biodiscovery, looking at marine biodiscovery. Ecotoxicology is a topic and ecological systems at University of Zululand, and then coastal livelihoods at Waterloo University. That is a logical extension of that program by bringing this research infrastructure closer to these HDI, as well as therefore giving them access both for researchers and students. So that's the context of the ACEP Professor Program. With regards to cancer treatment and what sort of breakthroughs there have been, I couldn't point to specific ones other than specific know-how around the production of radioisotopes by Thermalabs. For example, not only was the old cyclotron, which is about 34 years, was built by South Africans, every bit of it, and now we are in a situation where the target system, where you bombard chemicals with high energy beams in order to produce the radioisotopes, that was designed by Itambalet, and they've now introduced new improvements that they're going to utilize in order to use that system for the new cyclotron that they've just acquired as part of the South African Isotope Facility. But there are two areas that are being pursued. One is looking at targeted alpha therapy, which uses short wave particles, and so that the treatment doesn't damage healthy cells. So it only focuses on the diseased cells. And then we're also pursuing the issue of theranostics, where we're looking to produce radioisotopes that can be ligated and combined with other with other chemicals such as nanoparticles in order to locate, image, and treat cancer cells. So those are the areas that we're pursuing, and hopefully we have some discoveries coming out of that. But we're also exploring the issue of why do elephants not get cancer in the way that humans get? So we're looking at studying cancer cells to look for that. Then the last question was on the foreign income. The increases can be attributed to a number of issues. One is that there has been an increased demand from existing customers locally and internationally. The second one is that we are exploring and pursuing new markets for the existing isotope products, but also with the establishment of the SAFE project, there will also be a ramp up of the radioisotope production, and that the new secretary is dedicated to only producing radio the matter of the science center, the preparation for that is at an advanced stage. The conceptual designs of the science center that will be built in Carnarvon have largely been concluded. They have recently commissioned a specialist to do the design of the exhibits that will be in the science center, and they'll be utilizing two strategies. One of designing some exhibits from scratch, but also utilizing other exhibits that also exist both locally and internationally. And there's also advanced preparation for the commencement of construction of the facility. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members. There was a question from Honourable Boshoff around contracts and whether those contracts fund more than the work itself, or whether it cross-subsidises our research activities. In a nutshell, contracts by its very nature are very specific to the type of work that is expected to be done by the NRA. However, being within the mandate of the activities of the NRF. So it supplements the work of the NRF, but it does not cross-subsidize the work of the NRF. However, any of those funds that are received is underwritten or is supported by a detailed contract in terms of what the deliverables are, turnaround times, funding, etc., but on a full cost recovery basis. And I think that is key, that we don't take parliamentary grant appropriated funds and cross-subsidize contracts that we may receive from other parties that we may negotiate with them to do work on their behalf. In a nutshell, that's what it's all about. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Member of the Portfolio Committee and all colleagues, thank you for the opportunity to support the CEO not so much as a mandated former PBMR personnel, but very much as a former scientist. So my response will be more from the scientific side, not so much from a PBMR side. Just very briefly, Chair, on the question raised by the Honourable Member, the synergy between the PBMR and the work pursued by JAMA Labs in terms of medical isotopes would not be there necessarily. there could be synergies in other ways, but not necessarily from the perspective of the radioisotope being produced. We could discuss, you know, what would have happened to the fuel, but at least one of the other members to the fuel aspect. On the question, Chair, of countries like China, USA, pursuing the high temperature reactor technology, I would only answer that one from a perspective of my role in the OECD, where we are looking at future energy technologies. Yes, Chair, the US, China have made great strides in terms of HTR technology, some of it based on our experiences in the PBMR project. And probably the last thought, Chair, for me would be the greatest learning that one can pull from the PBMR experience, without getting into all the other issues, is that when we pursue to finance research, we should have the stamina to take it all the way, and if possible, to commercialization. Because research has the tendency to benefit those in the long run.
I would allow the PPC to someone, Dr. Alex Zeller, for a discussion on the PBMR. I can see that he's evading some of the questions, but I think on a serious note, Chair, I do want to say that we're very fortunate that on the board and with the network that we have, we do have quite a lot of institutional memory, and hopefully it will help in advancing us forward. I want to finish off with a point that you made yourself, Honorable Chair, about the private sector, and I think Honorable Yago also mentioned it in terms of the capital world and the typical relationship. Indeed, we have had within the sector challenges dealing with international partners in terms of the asymmetry of power that results in maldistribution of finances and so forth, because a lot of the funding that we apply for fundamental research does come from international research funders. And that for me really is that if within South Africa and within the state we were to increase funding into science and innovation, it will also give us leverage to negotiate. Within the NRF, we now do a lot of leverage funds whereby if we negotiating a partnership, we put a certain amount down so that we can negotiate with other funders. And this really is about trying to manage the asymmetry of power that we often encounter. And often it's not something that is spoken about. So I am hopeful that if a strategy is developed, perhaps with other partners, including NAGI, on how to engage with industry partners, we could develop some kind of ways of negotiating those asymmetries that we often encounter that can make things difficult. Let me finish off by saying, Honorable Chair, I do not agree that we have more acronyms in science than in politics. I do think that there is a lot of other acronyms out there that we often have the perception that are meant to exclude us from those spaces. But we are once again grateful for the opportunity to present to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much to the colleagues at the NRF for your response, and of course anything else that you'd like to add, particularly relating to detail that may be a bit tricky for us to take care of at this point, please do so in writing. Honorable Chachau has indicated that she has been misunderstood in certain areas, so we will be sending you her clarities in writing, that we would appreciate you to respond to in writing. I'd like to move over to Mune Kumalo, together with the colleague from NAGI.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for the question. I will not go into the PPMR discussion, but Honourable Yabo, we can always have a debate afterwards in terms of you know, the integrity in terms of what actually happened at PPMR. And I was on the fuel side, and I think Dr. Abela knows more on the reactor side. So yeah, so we can have a very good and rich discussion around PPMR. On the questions, so I will deal with some of the questions, and I will also hand over to my colleague, Dr. Frank, to give us a few responses, and then after that, we will have our acting CEO responding. So I think the big part, which was raised by quite a number of members, was the issue of the acting CEO. And I must say that the council, that was the first thing that the council raised as well, because it is quite an urgent matter in terms of us having a permanent CEO. So the matter has been taken up to the minister. I'm not sure if DTG has anything extra to add in that respect. Okay, you, Honourable Chair, you also cautioned us on the involvement of the private sector, and I think our CEO will go deeper into those engagements in terms of the partnerships with the private sector, and I do understand where you are coming from in terms of you know, balancing the politics and you know, as a business person myself, you know, when you put money into something, obviously you want a return on that on the money that you put in. Honourable Boshoff, you asked about the number of employees at Nike. Yes, it is a very tiny organization. There is 12 employees, you can correct me, I think. There's 12 permanent employees, and the rest is cheap labor, honorable, because we have 11 council members, and which have been paid peanuts, and from there we get experts that come in and assist us with a project, which also get paid peanuts. I think my colleagues from CSIR, thank you so much for donating your resources to us in terms of the experts that we use. Another question, it was on the Nike being in the presidency instead of being with DSI. That question has been raised before, and there has been some discussions around that, and the CEO will again touch on that in terms of where we are with that process. Excuse me. And I do agree in terms of you know, the your assessment in terms of, you know, when it's in the presidency and, you know, it's not part of a particular department, because we do get some challenges with the work that we do as the council members when you present work that touches on other departments, because the other departments do feel like you are stepping on their toes, you know, with the work that you do. So that is a question that has been raised. On the advice that has been given by Nike in the last 5 years, fortunately CEO has been there for longer than 5 years, so he will be able to touch on those questions. And I think at this point I will hand over to my colleague, Dr. Frank.
Thanks, Mr. Marlon. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Oversight Committee, colleagues, I must say I was extremely proud as a South African to be sitting here and listening to the reports on these three entities. I've been in higher education for more than three decades, and it really is great work that's been done. It's work that is never going to be completed. We continue to refine that, and so I must say that I think for the most part, we are on the right trajectory, which we can always refine and fine-tune. That said, I must apologize in advance for the brevity of my responses. I've got a flight to catch, and I totally underestimated the time frame, so I will factor that in the future, Chair. With regards to the kinds of advice that is provided to Minister, I've attended two NACI meetings, and then we've had a special NACI meeting. So, in one of the meetings, research was presented, which defines the role of the National System on Innovation in implementing the National Health Insurance Scheme. So that's the kind of advice which is given to Minister, and Minister will then take that to the Inter-Ministerial Committee to have a discussion. Another research report that was submitted to Minister is the State of Commercialization of Plant Breeders' Rights in South Africa. So those are just two examples. There is some work being done, to the best of my knowledge, on cybersecurity, but that's the kind of information that Minister takes to the Inter-Ministerial Committee. Let me then just divide my responses up into short-term activities, which will touch on a number of the questions that were raised. So in the short term, the work of NACI is defined in the annual performance plan for this year. And typically we've got a submission of three pieces of advice to Minister, NACI webinars and roundtable discussions on a number of different areas. Local patents and technologies, the role of the National System on Innovation in implementing the National Health, which I've dealt with, the Sovereign Innovation Fund, and there are a number of different themes there which the webinars will deal with. We're also involved in the arrangements around the BRICS conference later this year. We're planning to host a science, technology and innovation policy colloquium. So that gives you a sense of what's in the annual plan which you've got. And then, Chair, in the medium term, a number of the questions raised actually relates to the work that we want to undertake in the medium term. And we've constituted six subcommittees within the council. The first one dealing with the renewal and the repositioning agenda of NACI. There are two focus areas today. The one is dealing with legislation amendments, and the second one is the establishment of a new NACI as an independent entity. So a lot of the questions about structure, about numbers, are essentially work in progress. The second committee deals with the development of a monitoring and evaluation capability, which currently we don't have in that complement of 10 or 12 people. The third committee deals with resourcing and capacitating. Fourth is communication, branding, and public engagement, public awareness, which is very little of in terms of NACI in the public space. Private sector participation and engagement, which is also something was dealt with. And then the sixth committee is the transformation of NACI. So those are the medium term, which the council plans to dispose of during its tenure, which has just commenced. And then also during the tenure of the committee, we're planning a number of flagship projects, including the Africa Research Fund. And obviously there will have to be engagements with some of the other entities that we've spoken about with so much synergy and touch points. The Science and Innovation University of Ekurhuleni, there's a committee dealing with that, a flagship project. The Sovereign Innovation Fund is another project. The implementation of the Hydrogen Society Roadmap and how NACI can contribute to that is another flagship So those are some of the medium-term initiatives and projects. And then in the longer term, we've got a number of activities there, NACI, to be reconfigured and to act as a national science and technology innovation monitoring and evaluation platform. And so in the plans, you have short-term, medium-term, and long-term, and they're all well-defined, and we can arrange for CEO to have a far more comprehensive and cogent response as to providing a global response there, with the limited time that I have available. So thanks very much, and I'd like to hand back to Fanica.
Thank you, Professor Frank. I'll hand over to you.
Thanks, Acting Chair, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Let me just indicate that if the members were interested to get a comprehensive list of advice that NACI has provided since 1997, something that may have to submit it in writing because it's not possible. But secondly, the current legislation does not make provision for the minister to provide trainings for not accepting advice. So we don't get it. It's something that we're looking into. We've benchmarked NACI and the Council on Higher Education, whose act does make the provision. So we can indicate upfront that we are not likely to provide that information because the legislation does. As to why certain advice wouldn't, but we would provide the information as best as we can in terms of the. But in the last 5 years or so, Chair, in our annual report, which we did present to this committee, we did indicate a number of advice that we have provided. So, for instance, we did provide advice on water security. We did submit advice on energy storage. We did provide advice, which I mentioned in my presentation, on the establishment of Software Innovation Fund. We did provide advice on regional integration of renewable agenda. We did provide advice on a number of other areas which we would be able to provide to the committee. The department did have a discussion with the previous council in terms of the recent advice, what has happened to them. For instance, another advice which we provided and was utilized was on the framework for the development of the Decadal Plan. So it's part of what we advise government, and that was taken into consideration. We did provide advice in the reports on the assessment of math and science metric and PAR. That's with the department, it's recent. Yeah, so if I've missed some in the last 5 years, we will incorporate that in that long list. And then also in our annual report, the new annual report indicates what might have happened to the recent advice as a point of reference for previous ones. The previous annual report goes into detail because the previous council was providing an overview of what they were able to achieve. Now there was a question around the location. I think it's twofold. There's one about NACI being an internal mechanism. I don't want to respond to that question in case I misunderstood Honorable Osho. But let me attempt to respond in this fashion. That NACI is located, the secretariat is located within the department, but the actual council is independent and it's reports directly to the minister. So as an advisory mechanism, so it's the council provides advice to the minister, and then the minister may then facilitate access to cabinet or other processes. But other parliamentary, and you're correct, this is what I also thought you were asking. Other parliaments, they do have advisory mechanisms of different types. And such, they focus on different things. For instance, Dr. Mok will correct me, the Finnish parliament even have a plan to foresight exercise capability inside parliament, which enables the Finns or the Finnish government or Finnish parliament to think ahead, to plan ahead, you know, and be able to competently engage with the executive around the future of that particular country. So there are different modalities. Now, the issue around when NECI should be positioned, Chair, this is going to be subject to that legislative amendment process. I suppose Parliament will, you have the last say in terms when you amend the legislation about when NECI should strategically be positioned. But I must hasten to indicate that one of the issues that we'll have to deal with regarding the relocation of NECI to the presence is how to deal with the National Planning Commission and what would become the relationship, the nature of the relationship between NECI and the National Planning Commission, which in other countries is an equivalent of NECI. But secondly, a question has been asked, not least by the minister when we're having this debate and other people, about other instruments that are located in the presidency, including the Human Resource Development Council, the extent to which they are effective and so forth. So the question that we'll have all to grapple with is drawing, learning from that experience of having institutions in the presidency, would it make rational sense to relocate NECI to Council? What would be its potential to achieve what we'd like to achieve going forward? So they are different. So when we get to that stage, I think those questions will have to be clarified. NECI's job is to advise, and this is what we did in relation to basic education. That was our form of support. We did the analysis, we worked with them, we worked with different stakeholders, we submitted the report. It's now entirely upon government what it does with that report. Our responsibility will be as and when stakeholders invite us to engage, to share, we will do so. But we continue to monitor progress through the STI indicators report, and where is the need to ask and answer some questions, we will do so through that mechanism. But otherwise, we fully share the sentiments that members have expressed about the need to think about different mechanisms through which we can address this question of math and science. We do have personal views, but it's not a platform to articulate individual views. Now, there was a question about on the World Agriculture Trust Science Council. Now, let me deal with this question when I remember in this manner. Some time back, I think it was Minister Dr. Naledi Pandu, who was asked, and I stand to be corrected though, about whether DST, then now DSI, should be responsible for all science classes, so including those that are not currently reporting to the department. So that question remains unresolved. And again, there are issues that will have to be considered if that decision were to be taken. So in a sense, I'm also responding to your question. Yes, it's easy to submit an advice to the minister, which NECI could do if the council decides to look into that matter and provide advice. But operationalizing whatever recommendation, moving one entity reporting to a different line of function department to a separate, would be a totally different set of responsibilities, which I suppose is something that NECI and the department would have to deal with at that particular point. So in short, the council hasn't thought about that issue, but if there's a need to apply our mind or if we are requested to do so, we can look at it and then provide advice. So there was an issue around the rationalization of entities. I think it was more of a comment than our view is that we actually need more institutions to ensure that the NSI functions effectively and is able to discharge. But of course, those existing institutions need to work in unison and they need to work coherently. The issue around the organigram has been dealt with. It would be difficult to drop that dream list of what should go into the artificial intelligence strategy at this stage. I'm glad that Dr. Lamin is here because we're working with him together. But we'll urge Chair and Honourable Members to allow that process of developing that strategy so that it becomes scientific and rigorous and authentic and also consultative, because we also want people to participate. And when that strategy is ready to be engaged and shared, I'm sure the Parliament will be able to engage. So that would be our response. Our approach generally at NECI is to initiate processes that are, we take a broad and inclusive approach to our work. In a similar fashion, the question around establishing an Africa-wide research fund, in as much as we initiated the conversation and convened the webinar, and we don't implement. Our intention was to engage and then, you know, so now that stakeholders are able to pay, to identify what they can do in relation to that, it is good because it was never meant to be an NECI initiative. So we would play our role in support of the minister's drive towards the realization of that objective, and would support other institutions, and we're very pleased with the response from NRF. The issue around the public-private partnerships, Chair, I did indicate that our overall interest in that matter is, as I said, we've been reporting through our report that we are struggling to reach that 1.5. We've been asked questions. Ministers have said to us, it's not enough, it's good enough to simply identify a problem. What must be done? Firstly, answer why and what needs to be done. Give us solutions. We are an advisory board. So that is why we have thought about three instruments that we would like to use in our engagement with business. So that's how we are approaching. We're very clear, it's narrow focus. We want business to indicate to come on board to invest so that we can wrap up the investment and towards that 1.5 target. Of course, the issue around vested interest is the big issue, which we are hoping that all of us will be mindful about. There was a question about what obstacles are hampering our mandate. And yes, we have reported to the portfolio committee previously that the structural, the issue around the structure of NECI, the location, the caliber of the secretariat we have, and has not enabled NECI to fulfill its mandate. So that's well recorded. Even independent reviews have actually said so. So the issue around resources have also been cited, but we are quite positive and optimistic that this concerns us
to amend the legislation and fully and resource NECI will go a long way in dealing with these obstacles. But Chair, maybe it's important to say this point that despite all of those challenges, we were able to, with the support of South Africans, YSN, were able to come on board to work with us, and the department kept giving us resources to be able to get those colleagues. And the science centers, they've also availed their staff, but not for free, and we need to make it, you know, so, because they also need to be paid. So we've been giving them the stipend, the little things, just to survive. The issue around the legislative amendment process, the acting DG, they would deal, because that process relies with them. So they will be able to deal with this. Chair, I think we have addressed most of the questions that we addressed towards me. Thank you very much. Just to emphasize what Dr. Flan said, we'll be hosting a BRICS conference on STI policy and foresight exercise. We've had a steering committee discussion this week. We're still finalizing the dates, but it's likely to happen during the science forum or before the ministerial, if other partners agree on that question. So we're finalizing the agenda as well as the conference dates. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, CEO. I think one other question that was raised was on the timeline of the renewal and the repositioning agenda that NACI is on. We are having our first subcommittee meeting this coming Friday. So that is where we'll be detailing exactly what will be happening in the next 12 months. So I'm sure when we report next time, we'll be able to give detailed timeline. And in terms of other details, in terms of the questions that have been raised by the honourable members, we are happy to send the detail in writing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Nonkumalo. Mr. Dr. Frank is a teacher, as well as or rather in absence. My mom is so disappointed if she were to hear me speaking such English after she spent so much money paying for her high school football. And thank you very much to Dr. Gray for your responses. I'm hoping that in the writing you will also just refresh the committee's understanding of the acting issue. It wasn't responded to. Well, maybe I'm wrong. So if you can just capture that in the written response. And then at this point, I'll then hand over to Mr. Morfe to make those closing remarks of this first segment as well as the response from the department.
Thanks, President Chair. I can just very quickly the response that Google gave in relation to especially some other matters that has been referred to community, and if it's possible, Google, you may want to also respond on the issue of the acting and for that information. And then we've got just in the interest of time, we're going to really ask the question. So we're going to have Imran take the questions that relate to his work, especially where some of the issues around the issues of skills and the alignment with the Department of Higher Education and Training, we can take that to Imran. Vinny has agreed that I take some of the stuff related to ICR. She's accusing the fact that I was dealing with ICR some many years back. And then I don't know if Rakesha, you want to have some responses on programming two research matters, and then I will think I'm going to start with you.
Good afternoon, Chair, honourable members, and colleagues from entities. With regard to NACI, I will deal with the acting matter. As we speak, the cabinet memo is en route to the DPSA with the recommended candidate. So we are hoping that we will get some positive news. If it's accepted, then it's a matter of time before it's announced to cabinet. so we can close that matter, Chair. Thanks. And then with regard to the renewal process, at this moment, we have kind of like looked at the recommendations of the department, and we have allocated ourselves the task, which means that each DDG is responsible for something within that renewal process. The entire timeline is going to be a bit long because we have to look at the amendment of the NACI Act, which according to our legal services has said that it can take a minimum of 18 months to 2 years. But within that, we do have certain steps and deliverables to get us there, which I think each time we come to report quarterly, we can update the committee on where we are. Though it was the hope of the DG as well as the council chair that we could finalize the process sooner than later. Maybe just to give you a brief of what we're looking at, the amendment of the Act. We're also looking at the location and the structure of NACI. We're looking at the composition of the council to look at the expertise that is required. The strengthening of the secretariat in major and role clarification, and also joint initiatives between NACI, ASAF, Council for Higher Education, as well as SAFNAPS. Those discussions have not been initiated yet, but as soon as we have are clear on the roles and responsibilities internally, then the process will be underway. At the next ESCO of the second, we would be presenting something that speaks to roles and responsibilities and everybody then taking their task forward. In terms of the vacancy rate within the department, we are at 8.2%. Currently, with 35 vacancies out of 426 staff complement, but the 35 is those vacancies that we've prioritized. We've had to do that as the committee is aware that we are going through the realignment process currently. Ideally, we are not even supposed to be filling those positions, but we did ask the DPSA for a special permission to fill those vacancies because they were quite important. So the recruitment process is underway and within the current financial year. But on the same note, we are likely to finish the realignment process by the end of quarter three, of which then we would do a skills audit and then be able to place people accordingly. But then also, like we've been doing, we are going to update the committee on that process as it progresses. I think those are all for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. In the interest of time, let me take two questions. I think a number of others that are on the fence and HCD, etc., we effectively handled. So the first one is around the Kopenhagen Science Centre. I just sent a notification to staff and indicating that if there are concerns, they will investigate it from their perspective, though, because they've been engaging with the Eastern Cape Department of Education. Prior to establishing the centre, we spent a lot of time getting that MOU in place for them to take responsibility for it. And we told there are programs around teacher development and student exchange happening. But nonetheless, I think we take the comment that the Honourable King has mentioned, that we need to sweat these assets effectively. And if we're not sweating these assets effectively, we need to look at corrective measures. So the team from our science engagement team will investigate and see whether there's something we can do to encourage that. It's quite a wonderful facility in a rural community to maximize the benefits. And then there was a question about the infrastructure, and that will take a 3-hour briefing on its own. It's quite extensive. So we will try to send through a written comment, but just at the high level, Some of these are long-term investments. It's very difficult to say these are the milestones. As an example, we mentioned the Center for High Performance Computing, which is part of a broader initiative called NICIS, and that's an ongoing process. To keep that system updated requires ongoing improvements in the technology. So just with the board of the CSR approving an upgrade of the high performance computing facilities, that would be the next milestone, etc. So similarly, we have a range of research infrastructures. They're different to physical infrastructure. Some of them have a physical component. So for example, we have a nuclear medicine facility, and hopefully we'll invite the portfolio committee sometime in the third quarter of this year. They have had to put up a new building. Similarly with the polar research facility, we're doing this. So those time frames are staggered, but that doesn't imply that once the building is up, that everything is done, because there's ongoing investment in equipment, in facilities, etc. So we can try to, if there's some greater clarity that would help, just provide a short document that kind of gives an indication of research infrastructure. I think for any of those were the ones that were not adequately addressed by the NRF. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Just as there's something that I should have done in the beginning. You probably recall that over the past 12 months, we had the CDG for what we call Program 2. I should have introduced a new CDG, which is Rakeshi, who started on the 1st of April this year. So she is the new CDG, and I just thought I need to introduce her. If you can just wait. Okay. Thanks. So I'm just going to also very quickly respond to some of the questions that have been raised. Firstly, acknowledging, and Chairperson indicated that these are quite detailed questions, and that were necessary. From our point of view, we really appreciate, I think what makes us there as a department is when we get a whole lot of advice that we can possibly get from people like yourself, so we really appreciate that. So the first comment I think the professor has made was around the number of SMEs that we support. And there is indeed a lot of SMEs that we support. And sometimes we also have been reflecting as to whether some kind of support is what we need to support on. We've got a lot of, you have seen one of the technology stations. We've got a lot of small enterprises that are serviced through the tech stations. And depending on the level of service, sometimes you wonder whether we should just support everybody who comes through and they get some little advice here and there. So I think in terms of how many and what level of advice get given is something that we can interrogate further. So when TIA reports, you probably get to know that indeed there are a number of entities and small enterprises that get supported. The issue around the private sector partnership, I think that has been reflected on. What is very key is when you don't have an agenda, you actually are going to adopt an agenda of anybody who funds you. And in our case, we have been very strategic. So we've got an agenda, and most, if not all instances, we have an agenda that we are funding. And when we seek partnerships, it's negotiated on the basis of the mutual benefit between us and our partners. And in addressing another question that I said is really about international relations, is the fact that we engage on the basis of government foreign policy, which is why in all the engagements we always do so working with the with DECO. And that is really always quite important. The question around budget coordination and how other government departments are done. I think the process of development of the DKFF has been very instrumental in building some level of trust and synergy with other government departments. And as I'm talking to you, we are busy now refreshing some of the agreements that we have. And interesting because it is not in all departments. Some of the departments have already come forward because we know, for example, on the project that we're doing in ocean monitoring, the Department of Environmental Affairs, Fisheries and Forestry is already also providing extra funding to those kind of projects. So there are starting to be those things. We are discussing small business development on how, for example, some of the instruments that the innovation fund can be used to support small enterprises and even our tech stations. And if they interact with our tech stations for their incubatees, then again it's going to be a matter of transfer funding. So this whole issue of coordination across the internal plan is starting to take shape. It's not where we want it to be, and we also see when the mandate paper comes out, we'll be working with Treasury and with the DPME, you see that it clearly now begins to articulate the role of innovation in the digital plan in terms of how departments must bring us on board. On the issue you mentioned, Chairperson, the space weather and the responses to challenges such as flooding and so on, our biggest disaster in the area of whether it is flooding and, you know, droughts and so on and so forth, it has been more on the solutions that are needed from the remote sensing than space weather. And we have been, and then I'm pleased that the CSR is here, we have been in every single one of them offering our services in terms of how training can help. Through the CSR, you can be able to look at the impact of the impact. So we were able, for example, the KZN flooding, to pick up the damages in the, you know, whether it was Toyota factory, whether it was the refinery, and so on and so forth, but also technologies that can easily pick up some slight movement on the survey can pick up if there's going to be a mudslide and stuff like that. However, what is required is, and we have made this recommendation now in the latest budget in KZN, we need to have a living agreement and partnership with COMTA, where there is funding available, so that when that happens, we actually can deploy and not worry about resources because resources will be there. And of course, part of the thing is how do we build capacity at local government level, because one of the things that we saw is that sometimes you there you can provide technologies to deal with water purification, but on the ground there isn't capacity to take that on. So that is really one of the things that is part of the building of the capable state we need to really look at. And then I'm glad that following the latest intercase disasters, we actually started involving CSIR and space agencies to discuss the possible formalization of the partnership to report those going to be successful. There have been questions around the issue of energy. Now, I think one of the things is we need to be able to pick up the relevant solutions to the relevant problem. The energy problem is not necessarily a technology problem. It's a concoction of maintenance. So if you don't maintain your car, it's not a science and technology problem. It's really just a planning problem. And science and technology, much as we can investigate alternative sources of energy, like we come up with hydrogen and so on and so forth, energy storage or those programs on the go, they don't replace the fact that if you've got a car, you must go for service. So the issue of rationalization and the number of additional, I think Dr. Mungi attempted to look at that. The thing is, when you rationalize the science system, you need to ask yourself, what are you trying to get out of that rationalization? The Department of Science and Innovation has got a $9 billion budget. Now, that's not a GST budget or GSI budget. It's a budget that goes to one of the biggest research councils in the continent and probably empower the best in the world, the CSIR. There's a share in that $9 billion that goes to the CSIR. There's a share in that $9 billion that goes to the NRF. There's a share in that $9 billion that goes to ASAP, that goes to TILA, that goes to the Space Agency even. So when you say you want to rationalize, you need to ask yourself, what do you get out of $9 billion? Which is actually not even the size of a budget, of an incentive budget
in some of the parts. They haven't, they have incentives that are worth 12 or whatever billions. We have a budget that supports all these entities for them. So I think some of the issues around rationalization basically means that you are left with a bone, and with a bone you don't live. And that's really, I think, the discussion that we put it into to put in context. On the issue of energy again, the just transition simply means that you actually move and change at a pace that doesn't leave anybody behind or disadvantage anybody. Now the issue of coal, and I need to clarify that, South Africa has got coal reserves, and we can't just simply say the proverbial cows that we have, which is coal, let's burn them and kill them in the hope that there are other cows that are coming in the form of renewable energy. Now that doesn't work. It is for this reason that when you read, for example, in the Reuters report, you will see that the export of coal to Europe in 2022 has grown 6 times. What is that coal going to do? It is going to sustain their economy. They are going to burn to generate electricity. So when we say the just transition, we are saying we appreciate the fact that we need to move and incorporate renewable energies. But we are not going to switch everything off coal. We are going to actually just grow. In fact, we are going to have a division to say X amount coal by whatever number of years. And this is what, when you look at Germany, the same story. They still have energy that are generated from coal. So I think it's not an issue of either or, but it's an issue of how do we incorporate these things in a manner that while we want to breathe nice air, we actually are still able to eat because we are cooking from coal energy. So then I think there were comments about aspect of transformation. And the issue of the newer technologies and ties in with this one, I think that's the question that Honorable Yabo raised. Are these newer sources of energy going to benefit everybody? And that's really the point that I'm just transitioning, Honorable Yabo. If when we go carefully and slowly, we are then able to say, if we are saying renewables, what is it that is going to come in as local content? Because if you don't do that, then you just move and you're actually propping up an economy somewhere in Europe or in China and so on, because you're importing all these other things from this country. We therefore, in doing so, need to be able to say, over what period of time are we going to be able to say, if we are moving fully into solar, what percentage of those would have been manufactured locally? Which is why, when we had this investment conference on Thursday last week, there were a lot of South African companies that were going to say, we are going to invest in local manufacturing. And that's really what you want. If you just do it haphazardly, then this economy becomes old somewhere and we don't want to go there or we don't want to go back. So I think I probably didn't answer everything, Honorable Chairperson, but I think there are just some very critical things that when we put the interest of this country and the interest of the young people that we are saying they must go into science, he has said, if we want those nuclear energy graduates to find jobs, you can't close the PDMR. If you want the number of engineers in South Africa to be there, you can't close the space agency. You can't close an ESCOM. So those are the sort of things, because otherwise we find these engineers graduating and doing nothing, or doing gardening, like we see in other countries, where engineers and scientists are doing gardening. Why? Because there isn't any engineering work to do in their own countries. And South Africa doesn't and cannot afford to go into that. So I just want to stop there. And then we'll take some of these things in terms of the writing. Thank you.
No, there are two questions.
No, there was a question around why our budget is so easy, and also what we take in the infrastructure. You know, with the reduction of budget, there are two reasons. You know, inflation increases. And also cut.
over the years, our budget has been in line with inflation. And some 2 years back, I think 6 or 4 years. Sorry. A few years back, we had a significant cut in our budget as a result of funds that we needed for higher education funding. And we also had cuts when we could fit 1.2 billion. So our budget has not recovered since then. So we are still in maybe those challenges. And with regards to why our budget now is in doubt and is declining, we applied for funding for space infrastructure help and SKA. And we were given funding for 2 years, which is going to stop. That's why now they start decline in those 2 years. So we do have that funding for infrastructure, but it's not going to be given over the years. So we will have that significant reduction in our budget.
And apologies here for I hope my good and safe is by it.
For your salary. Thank you very much, Kenny, for your responses. There are of course some that have not been responded to and that colleagues have committed to responding to in writing. There are also areas where I think this issue of English, just transition. All these terms, Honorable Yabo said something. You know, when I listen to Honorable Yabo speak sometimes, I always want to have my dictionary out. I even wrote it down, because it's important to disambiguate the science world. Every time you speak, I feel like there's a quote, you know, one must just take your quote. When you pass away, I will just put all those things on a slideshow. I think Honorable Kakao is feeling very misunderstood, and she's very upset. But I'm managing her because of time, and she's allowed me to. As Mr. Mosa was speaking towards the end, what I was happy about as a chairperson was that some of the things we've been saying as a committee, the department is reiterating. Very early in the conversations around, it was last year, where we asked a question of the committee to say, you know, as we talk about, I think it was around the conversations around hydrogen energy, the hydrogen economy and all of that. And we said, look, and it was DG, in fact, who responded when we asked the question around the compromise that African countries or developing countries have made in signing, you know, commitments like the agreements like the Kyoto Protocol, where it has to manage my emissions, and they're so developed and we are trying to catch up, and you know, in terms of equity or equity in development, how fair is that? And I think DG, you know, explained it clearly and affirmed the position of the department, and I think I think the general sentiment is that we acknowledge the fact that as we move towards development, there needs to be a way for us to look into different energy sources, alternative sources, as we do a sustainable future, and we need to catch up. And there needs to be that balance. And if there are people who should be slowing down or should be looking at alternatives and it's those who put us in this situation in the first place. And I think members from different parties are just feeling like it's important for us to balance the two. And how do we do that? And that's the biggest question that I think the department should be coming to us with, which I think is what you're saying. So Honorable Kakao is asking not to be misunderstood, that she's saying, hey, just move with the renewable energy thing. I blame it on English. So I just want to find, you know, it's important that we understand one another in that regard. And just appreciate the fact that the department is hearing the general sentiment of the committee. I'm gonna close on this segment, Shanaz and Renee, so that you can just capture the way forward from this segment. Generally, the committee is happy with the plans of the department, and of course, you know, what becomes important for us is the impact, the relevance, the inclusivity, the intersectionality of the work that we are about to do, ensuring that we've learned from the past, taking into consideration what members have said today, and moving forward in the implementation of these plans. There are great concerns around budget, and the budget that we have as a system, and there's a need for us to accelerate our advocacy as a committee in this regard, particularly for funding for students. And I, was it yourself, Chair, or the CEO, one of the, between the two of you, I think it was you, Chair, who explained the, I don't know, Honorable Yabo, what term I must use for this, but the, it's like an ecosystem, it's a chain. If you don't do the other things that happens, but then you realize that, oh, it was you, CFO. Yeah, and it's, you know, that whole chain that you explained, or ecosystem that you explained, is really what it is. And you almost ask yourself, at what point do you start? You said you must start with the 2.5 billion that is needed for, I think, the research, the lectures. That's where you put it. Someone else could say maybe start with the postgraduate student. Like, but it has to come in some way, right? And maybe it shouldn't be one way. It shouldn't be a massive injection into the one. But we could say, if you put a little bit in here and you put a little bit up here, then maybe we'll find the type of equilibrium that we want. But ultimately, we have a great challenge there. And I think through the committee, we must find a way of writing to Treasury as the committee and saying, these are the five issues that we are greatly concerned about as a committee. So I think that must be a resolution of this committee. But we are going to write to Treasury and say, look, in terms of the DSI budget and its plan, these are the five areas that we are concerned about as part of our advocacy work. We, of course, have acknowledged the change in leadership and have wished all the new leaders well. NACI, there is information that you are to send us around the different lists. CEO, if you can clarify, there's something you were saying about what you can't share with us because the legislation says something, and I got a bit lost. If you can submit that in writing to us, please, we'd appreciate that. And then the NRF, if you could submit to us in writing the breakdown of the funding shortage. And then I think the conversation around, you know, NACI and what it does is something we can lift as a committee for a later session. I think it's something we can zoom into. So NACI and the type of advice it's given in the past, the type of advice it can give going into the future, the complexities between, you know, where we see NACI being placed in the future. I think there was a lot that was coming out of, you know, the engagement today that could be lifted as a standalone committee meeting, and then we really must appreciate the updates we received relating the acting CEO, and I hope I'm not dealing with anyone's present back up by pushing for this issue of acting to be addressed. But the issue of Sophie Mbaba, also we must appreciate that there's been swift action by yourself, that you actually, while you were in this meeting, got some sort of update or communicated with colleagues there while we were here. We must appreciate that, Mr. Patel. Also to say this is a reoccurring concern around what where DSI puts its resources to help with science engagement or help with awareness or help with strengthening countries' you know, STEM capabilities from grassroots level, because it sounds very similar like the challenge we have in Sutherland, where the DSI and the NRF went, you invested in a school science lab, years later we go there, there's nothing. And so it's a reoccurring sort of challenge. We were putting in money as a DSI and our entities, but there's no sustaining of those particular efforts, and we need to zoom into that, and people must be held to account. And it's not like, maybe people think that because we're science and innovation to them. I've got a feeling people think science and innovation has money.
Yeah.
For some, I think they think because it sounds nice that we have money, but we actually don't. that's a reoccurring issue that I think the department must look closely into, to say that no, once we've invested here, it must be sustained, it must be maintained. And of course, conversations like rationalization, those are things that we can package on us into a standalone meeting for us to, you know, debate these issues out. And that's about it. I think colleagues from the engagements we had, members raised a lot of concern around brain drain, and that also being a huge part of our concerns in terms of the science and innovation system and our capabilities leaving the country. And made also lots of recommendations on how we can continue to strengthen the national system of innovation. But ultimately, I think what's really coming out of the engagement, as always, is that ESI is doing a great job, just be more impactful, more intentional, more mainstream, you know? Yeah, nothing be like this, not shutting with. I think that's about it. I'd like to release the colleagues from NACI and the NRF. Of course, the GSI will remain with us. And then we'll move into a session with the HSRC and the CSIR. I want to afford them an opportunity to move closer while others move out. So it's 16:10 now. If we can be seated at 16:20. I'd also like to ask, as we go into that session, you know, colleagues, sometimes the vision and mission and both lives, colleagues, you know, I feel bad saying this because I didn't say it at the beginning of the meeting, so now it's like I'm trying to manage this collective, and I'm not doing that at all, colleagues. Professor, I am not managing you. As a professor, as my alumni, I can never do that to you, or my alma mater, sorry, I cannot do that to you. But I think let's just leave all of that out and go straight into the key issues in our presentation. Thank you very much to colleagues from NACI as well as the NRF.